Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday because right now, Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day, yeah?
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes of networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
I'm John Bashevis-Lila Philip, the author of Beaverland, a book I heartily recommend because we've lived our whole lives in North America not appreciating the architect. The architect is, as Lila describes him, a chubby little furry creature with four orange teeth and a great big sensitive tail. Now, the story begins again with a man named Astor overhearing a conversation on a ship that he was taking to America. The Astor fortune, Lila, I can't recall, was it the first great fortune or was it just one of a number of fortunes that were being built out of nature?
Well, I think you'd have to say it was one of the many fortunes being made out of nature because there were great fortunes being made out of the timber trade at the same time. But down here in, up in Canada, for example, but down here in North America, he was our first multimillionaire for sure. And the story of him coming over on the North Carolina, this ship with his seven flutes, which he had spent years saving up money for his passage and buying these flutes. And he was going to start a music business in Manhattan. And then he overhears the story of these people talking about trading this item where they could get a markup of something like 900% if they could just get this trade item back to London. And when he discovers it's beaver pelts, quick as a wink, as soon as he gets back, he sells those flutes and he starts buying beaver fur. And within short order, he's one of the richest men in New York. And very soon, he is our first American multimillionaire, which is pretty extraordinary story.
Spreading all across North America to Oregon, in fact. But I want to come to the fur traders, the fur trappers. They were a critical part of the development of America, the prosperity that they brought to individuals who trapped. You've been speaking across America, telling the beaver story, which we've only in part introduced, but we can also hear how magical it is. How have your presentations been heard by the fur trappers, the fur men?
It's complicated because, you know, the fur trade really went belly up because we did what we've done throughout this continent. We kind of ripped through the natural resources without a thought and a care for the fact that they're finite. Really devastated, you know, the great environmental resources that were here, and the beavers are no example. So Astor sets up this extraordinary network by going out west. He convinces Jefferson to let him found a trading post on the Columbia River where it meets the Pacific. He calls it, names it Astoria in Oregon. But, you know, by 1824, the beaver are pretty much gone. And so he starts trading other things. So the fur trade today, you know, leaping forward to today, that I would discover here in Connecticut is really a small group of individuals dedicated to continuing that legacy. A lot of them I would describe as history buffs, or like Herb Sobanski, who in many ways was kind of my first mentor about beavers because he taught me so much about the animal and the woods. And it was for him that I got the title of the book, Beaverland, because he just stood in a beaver swamp one day and just almost shouted with joy at the beauty of what he was seeing and said, "This is Beaverland." And I wrote it down thinking, what does he mean? That's just very cool. And then after years of research, I fully understood. But you know, in some ways, he taught me to love the beautiful landscapes here in Connecticut. So the fur trade today, well, it's a very small community of people doing it because they kind of just love what they do. The fur sale last year, I think a beaver pelt brought in something like $10. You know, it can take someone just half a day to set up a trap line and it's not something anyone's going to make any money on anymore. So
they know the fur trade is specialized. Do Americans know about it? When you speak to audiences that have your book in their hand, is this a revelation to them, Lila?
I think it is, although I think also so many things have changed. And I think even Herb Sobanski, you know, sadly, he passed away and he read parts of the book and he was really excited about the book. He kind of was really loved what I was writing about. But I think he'd be the first to understand that a live beaver now is more valuable to us than a beaver pelt. And that most of the fur trappers I know, the ethical trappers, like ethical hunters, you know, are doing it in a thoughtful, conscious way. They're not just going out there to just kill beavers because they feel like it. So there are situations where beavers are flooding in areas where they coexistence strategies don't work. I think my personal feeling, and I think the feeling now, is they are so valuable to us in our fight against climate change. Wherever we can leave them in the landscape, that needs to be the priority. And institutions like the Beaver Institute here in the East are helping people with information, problem solving, resources. Out West, California has a, you know, statewide beaver working group, bringing beaver back into the watersheds for wildfire mitigation, flood control. Oregon, Utah, Nevada, ranchers are bringing beavers back. You know, they need grass for their cattle. And if you have beavers in your river system, you have grass for longer. So I think a light bulb is going on that we need the ecological services of the beaver more than we need pelts in 2023. And that era of utilizing them as a commodity is really over. You know, it is true that the conversion of natural resources into power is the propelling force of empire, but that story is past. And we are now in a fight for our lives with climate change, you know? And so I think beavers have this fantastic role to play helping us with that.
Importantly, Lila gives us one detail that I urge everybody to check out on Google Earth. In North Alberta, there is a beaver dam measured, according to your reporting, Lila, at 2,790 feet, and it stands at least 25 years. It's flabbergasting.
Even more flabbergasting is when I tell you that the largest animal construction on Earth, as seen from satellite, is that beaver dam. That, you know, beavers, this relatively small rodent, although they are the second largest rodent in the world. The first are the adorable capybara in South America that are kind of a YouTube sensation now. But, you know, we really don't fully understand yet how beavers do what they do. Although Dr. Jordan Kennedy, who I write about in Beaverland, I think has begun to crack the code of beaver intelligence by thinking about them in terms of stigmergy, which is
30 seconds, Lila, 30 seconds.
Okay. Well, anyway, she's really starting to understand that beavers, working as a collective, can build structures that are not just resilient and really formidable, but actually persevere up to 200 years in some cases.
The 27th of November, 2023, when you see the full beaver moon, think of how we got here. Lila Philip, the book is Beaverland, How One Weird Road Made America. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.